brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Scott Jacobs.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 063, 11/21/2013. Our 1 year anniversary is today. I want to say thank you for all you listeners and sticking around to this little bit strange format, but it seems to be working. For 1 year, we have about 125,000 downloads. Wow. It exceeded my expectations. I'm not going anywhere. I know I've been a little sporadic on when I'm getting these things posted. You know, I'm just doing this on my own and have a full-time job and a family. But I love doing these, and one day I'd love to do it full-time. But for now, this is what I got, and I'm thanking my listeners, and I hope you guys get something out of it. All right, let's roll into article number one. Hemp proponents hope to lift haze surrounding the crop. Take it away.
Hemp proponents hope to lift haze surrounding crop. By Rob Hodokanen. Source equal Kentucky.com. Authorities arrested David Bronner when he locked himself in a steel bar cage in front of the White House last year and began using a hand-powered press to extract fresh oil from 12 large hemp plants, which he planned to put on French bread and serve to passers-by. Bronner, a California executive, says there's no good reason that growing hemp, the non-intoxicating sister plant of marijuana, is still illegal in the U.S. On Monday, he came back to Washington, joining a group of 50 citizen lobbyists who urged Congress to lift the federal ban, saying it would allow more domestic hemp to be used in food, clothing, body care products, construction materials, even auto parts. "It's time to grow hemp," Bronner said. "I mean, it's been a long and ridiculous situation." The issue gained traction in September, when California Democratic Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that would allow farmers in the state to grow hemp if the federal government lifts its ban. California joined 9 other states with similar laws, but growers still never know if they'll face federal prosecution. "You have to be willing to bet the farm to find out," said Tom Murphy, national outreach coordinator for a pro-legalization group called Vote Hemp. Ryan Laughlin, a Colorado farmer who joined the group at the Capitol, decided to take the risk, growing 60 acres of hemp and harvesting the crop last month. It was touted as the first acknowledged commercial hemp crop in the U.S. in more than 50 years. "It's a ridiculous policy, so I just challenged them on it," Laughlin said, adding that he so far hasn't faced any threats of enforcement action. Growers say the situation in the U.S. is complicated by the fact that it's legal to buy and sell hemp products but not to grow and cultivate the crop. They're out to sell legalization with economic arguments, saying the industry already has more than $500 million in annual retail sales. "It's not a drug. It's purely about jobs," Laughlin said. Not everyone's convinced, however. "Hemp is the forgotten child of drug policy, and for good reason. I have never heard a solid rationale for legalizing something with such little demand," said Kevin Sabet, the director of the University of Florida Drug Policy Institute and a former advisor on drug issues to Presidents Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. Sabet said the small demand for hemp was filled by foreign producers at little cost to the American economy, but that legalizing it might frustrate enforcement efforts, as people could be growing marijuana but hiding it under the guise of hemp. Hemp growers say their cause is helped by the growing popularity of the movement to legalize marijuana. A majority of Americans now say they want criminal penalties removed for possession, polls indicate. 2 states, Washington and Colorado, voted last year to approve marijuana for recreational use for adults 21 and older beginning in 2014. Hemp backers say they'll secure another big win if they can convince House of Representatives and Senate negotiators to include language in a new farm bill that would allow colleges and universities to grow hemp for academic and agricultural research. Bronner, the CEO of Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps, imports the plant from Canada and uses it in his line of natural soaps, saying it contains the popular omega-3 essential fatty acid and produces a smooth lather that's less drying to the skin. "It's just a really good oil," he said. Bronner said the most ridiculous part of the drug war has been banning hemp at all, because it can be used for getting high. He said it never should never have been classified with marijuana as a controlled substance in the first place, and that it now became increasingly untenable to maintain the hemp ban as states move to legalize marijuana. He and other hemp supporters said it was only a matter of time, perhaps a few years at most, before the federal government would give a green light to their industry. "We're just really excited," Bronner said. "It's been a long time coming."
Article number 2. Local mom hopes medical marijuana bill passes. Take it away.
Local mom hopes medical marijuana bill passes. By Tamira Rush. Source, CBS Pittsburgh. Two state senators, one a Republican and the other a Democrat, are planning to introduce a bill to legalize a certain form of marijuana for medicinal use in Pennsylvania. Sense. Dalen Leach and Mike Folmer said Monday their bill would help ensure Pennsylvanians can get medical benefits from cannabidiol, a compound found in marijuana that's credited with various medical applications without providing a high. Heather Schuker, mother of 10-year-old Hannah Palace, tells KDKA's Marty Griffin that her daughter suffers from 5 different seizure types on a daily basis. Hannah's seizures began when she was 4 months old and they have escalated in recent years. Hannah could have anywhere from 100 to 300 seizures a week. Last night alone, Schuker says she suffered 51 seizures. Heather says there have been discussions about surgery, but it requires the brain to be split in half. Initially, and out of desperation, she was planning on having the surgery done. However, there are other options. Hannah is not physically in condition to get any type of surgery or to be placed under anesthesia. Something as simple as medical marijuana could help. As of right now, because medical marijuana is not legal in Pennsylvania, she would have to move to Colorado in order to pursue that option. When asked about moving to a state like Colorado where she could receive medical marijuana, Hannah Schuker discusses the weight of a decision like that. "One of the things that people don't understand is that this is illegal federally, so, not only in Pennsylvania is it illegal, but it's illegal federally. If we move there, we can't leave the state, because if we leave and we're caught with it, it's a felony." Two Pennsylvania mothers of children with epilepsy, including a rare and sometimes deadly form called Dravet syndrome, appeared with Leach and said they believe it can help their children.
Article number 3. Medical marijuana in Oregon. Rob Bovet says dispensary law needs tweaks. Take it away.
Medical marijuana in Oregon. Rob Bovet says dispensary law needs tweaks. By Noel Crombie. Source, The Oregonian. Rob Bovet's irritation over aspects of Oregon's new medical marijuana dispensary law was clear to everyone attending a meeting Monday to review the latest draft of rules designed to govern the industry. Bovet, the Lincoln County District Attorney and a leading law enforcement voice on drug policy, told other members of the Rules Committee that he planned to write a letter to Governor John Kitzhaber detailing what he sees as a laundry list of problems with House Bill 3460. The law creates a registry of medical marijuana dispensaries. Buffett said he'd like Oregon lawmakers to consider tweaking the law during the short session planned for February. The committee charged with drafting rules for retail outlets will meet again before the end of the year. The state plans to begin accepting applications for establishments in March 2014. Buffett said he's concerned the state's plan to hire 4 people to enforce the dispensary rules is inadequate. He also thinks lawmakers should add a provision allowing local governments to impose their own restrictions on these establishments, as some cities have already done. Buffett said one of his top concerns is the requirement that only owners of medical marijuana retail facilities must undergo criminal background checks. Employees aren't subject to background checks under the law. Here we are setting up a scheme whereby the employees in these medical marijuana dispensaries are going to be dispensing what is in Oregon a Schedule II controlled substance, and they themselves are completely unregulated, no permit, no training, Buffett said. It makes no sense to me. It could be someone convicted of murder, literally, he said. It could be someone who engaged in all kinds of nefarious activity, and we have no regulatory authority over the people working in these things. It's crazy. Jeff Sugarman, a political consultant who helped draft the law and a member of the Rules Committee, said it should be up to dispensary owners to vet their employees. Where else do we require all employees of a business to be background checked? He said. Don't we put that onus on the business itself to make sure the employees they are hiring are going to be good employees? Sugarman said backgrounding medical marijuana employees didn't come up during the process of drafting the bill. We need to get away from this notion that everybody who works in this industry is a criminal, he said. It's just not true. As the industry grows and becomes more professional, it should be treated like any other business out there. Colorado, which has medical marijuana and last year legalized recreational marijuana, requires detailed financial and criminal background checks of facility owners, and a criminal background check of all employees. Ian Sieb, a marijuana business consultant and owner of a Denver medical marijuana center, said employees should undergo background checks. If they are only vetting the owners, who is to say the integrity of their entire operation isn't going to be jeopardized by one individual? Sieb said. What you are dealing with, it's like jewelry, he added. You are dealing with a high-value commodity.
Article number 4. Three myths about the marijuana lobby. Take it away.
Three myths about the marijuana lobby. By Rob Campia. Source, Huffington Post. Now that support for making marijuana legal has reached 58% nationwide, according to the prestigious Gallup organization, opponents of marijuana legalization are now trotting out arguments that were only used in impolite company years ago. Let's review the arguments of prohibitionists who are squirming right now, because they'll soon be out of jobs. I'll also soon be out of a job, but I've been working toward this goal for 20 years. On the other hand, some law enforcement officials, drug treatment professionals, and anti-marijuana advocates actually want to keep their jobs forever. Myth number 1, drug cartels support legalization efforts. As the leader of the largest marijuana legalization organization in the world, I can attest that my organization doesn't receive money from cartels in Colombia, Mexico, or elsewhere. In my 2 decades of working on this issue, I have never seen or heard of any organization gaining their support. I'm willing to testify under oath on this question. Are prohibitionists such as Carl Lowe, seen here claiming marijuana legalization is driven by multi-big billions of dollars from the drug cartels, willing to testify under oath on the same question? I doubt it, because it's easier to throw barbs than to speak the truth. In any case, it wouldn't actually make sense for drug cartels to fund legalization in the United States, because legalization would undercut their profits. For example, did Al Capone fund efforts to legalize alcohol in the U.S. in the 1920s? The simple fact is that marijuana legalization in the U.S. would seriously detract from the profits of drug cartels inside and outside the U.S. Myth number 2, the marijuana industry will market to minors. Prohibitionists within government and the private sector have built their careers saying that legalizing marijuana would increase teen access to marijuana. Putting it another way, prohibitionists have sacrificed nonviolent adults on the altar of ostensibly protecting children. Setting aside the question of whether marijuana legalization would actually increase teen access to marijuana, it would not, according to the latest research. Could it really be true that the emerging marijuana industry would actually want to market marijuana to teens? The answer is no. While there might be a few marijuana opportunists out there, just as there are in any industry, anyone who wants to make real money selling marijuana to adults would need to create a firewall between adults and minors, in the same way that liquor stores don't want to risk their liquor licenses by selling alcohol to minors. Illegal drug dealers don't ask for ID, but alcohol dealers really do require proof of age. Myth number 3, the marijuana industry is the next big tobacco. There's one small marijuana company in Seattle that has been claiming to be big marijuana as a way of drawing investor attention to that company, but it hasn't worked, which I'm happy to report. When we think about what big marijuana would look like, it would probably include lots of advertising and lots of profits. In regard to advertising restrictions, we already know some obvious things, including that flyers cannot be placed under the windshield wipers of cars in high school parking lots and other shenanigans that any reasonable adult would oppose. In other words, we all agree with some advertising restrictions. In fact, it was members of the medical marijuana business community in Colorado who spearheaded a push for a ban on certain types of outdoor advertising. In regard to profits, it's okay if marijuana businesses make profits, just as it's okay for bars, restaurants, and other alcohol businesses to make profits. The accusation of big tobacco is just a new way of scaring mainstream voters who are actually okay with marijuana stores here and there. It's important for all of us to keep our eye on the prize by agreeing that marijuana should be legal for people 21 and older. We'll put cartels and gangs out of business, and we'll have reasonable restrictions on advertising. None of this is new. Anyone who believes that alcohol should be legal should also agree that marijuana should be legal. This is simple for most of us to understand. The only people who are trying to confuse it are those who are making profits from marijuana prohibition, international drug cartels and, unfortunately, so-called anti-drug non-profit organizations in the U.S. Shame on them.
Article number 5. Uruguay marijuana legalization law could set new tone for war on drugs in Latin America. Take it away.
Uruguay's marijuana legalization law could set new tone for war on drugs in Latin America. By Jonathan Watts. Source, The Raw Story. Inhaling deeply from a large joint of unadulterated cannabis, Marcelo Vasquez grins at the imminent prospect of his outlawed passion becoming Uruguay's newest state-sanctioned industry. This week, the country's Senate is expected to pass the world's most far-reaching drug legalization, which should transform Vasquez from a petty criminal into a registered user, grower and ultimately, he hopes, a respected contributor to society. That would be quite a change. After a police raid earlier this year, Vasquez, whose home doubles as a marijuana nursery, was jailed and 70 of his plants were confiscated. But the court case that followed now looks likely to go down as one of the last cannabis trials in his country's history. The marijuana regulation bill, which has been passed by the lower house of the Uruguayan parliament, will allow registered users to buy up to 40 grams a month from a chemist's, registered growers to keep up to 6 plants, and cannabis clubs to have up to 45 members and cultivate as many as 99 plants. Vasquez, who smokes 4 joints a day, is delighted. "It's a great step forward that couldn't happen anywhere but here," he says. "There's a lot more to marijuana than smoking and getting high. This is not just a spliff talking. With the new law, Uruguay will go further than any other nation in exploring the potential benefits and risks of marijuana. The government is designing a new set of legal, commercial and bureaucratic tools to supplant a violent illegal market in narcotics, improve public health, protect individual rights, raise tax revenues and research the medical potential of the world's most widely used contraband drug." The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime estimates that there are 162 million cannabis users, 4% of the world's adult population PDF. Most countries have followed a policy of prohibition for decades, but there are signs of change. Amsterdam's coffee shops still offer cannabis on their menus despite a recent tightening of the rules in the Netherlands. Dozens of U.S. states have decriminalized or ceased penalizing users of the drug. Washington and Colorado recently introduced a cannabis tax, and California has steadily blurred the line between medical and recreational use. In the UK, the Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, has ordered a review of existing drug policies and is expected to recommend that Britain relaxes its controls. But no government has put in place a structure as all-encompassing and supportive as that envisaged in Uruguay. "We'll be the first country to have a regulatory framework for marijuana production, distribution, sale, consumption and medical research," says Julio Bongo, one of the legislators who drafted the bill. "This is an experiment without a doubt, and it will have a demonstrable effect. That could be important for the world because it could be the start of a new paradigm. Uruguay is trying to bring the cannabis market under state control by undercutting and outlawing the traffickers. If the bill is passed, the government will arrange for a high-quality, legal product to be sold in a safe environment at a price that competes with that offered by illegal dealers. If 1 gram costs $1 in the black market, then we'll sell the legal product for $1. If they drop the price to 75 cents, then we'll put it at that level," says Julio Calzada, a presidential advisor and the head of the National Secretariat on Drugs. Most cannabis sold in Uruguay is of poor quality and smuggled in from Paraguay. In future, the government will license firms to produce local products grown in monitored conditions, which will then be sold to registered users through pharmacies. As in the case of tobacco, cannabis suppliers will not be allowed to advertise their product. Following moves to legalize same-sex marriage and abortion, this measure is likely to reinforce Uruguay's growing reputation as a bastion of tolerance and progressiveness in Latin America. But President José Mujica dismisses talk of liberality. A reluctant advocate of marijuana regulation, he says that this is the only way to stem the tide of the illegal drug trade, which has had dire consequences for individuals and wider society across Latin America. "This is not about being free and open. It's a logical step. We want to take users away from clandestine business," Mujica tells The Guardian. "We don't defend marijuana or any other addiction. But worse than any drug is trafficking. Rather than liberalism, Uruguay's actions are better explained by a long and pragmatic tradition of market intervention and nationalization. The state controls core energy and telecoms industries, it fixes prices for essentials such as milk and water, and it pioneered some of the tightest controls on tobacco in the world. The small country also boasts an impressive record for drug seizures, with an estimated 10% of the total market intercepted by law enforcement authorities, compared with a world average of less than 5%. Until recently, Uruguay had avoided the epidemic levels of illegal narcotic trafficking that are far more pronounced in Brazil, Colombia, Peru and Mexico. The country is winning individual battles, says Mujica, but systematically losing the war. The growing popularity of pasta base, a highly addictive, crack-like drug, and an increase in drug-related murders has prompted him to act against the dealers by destroying their competitiveness in the biggest illegal market, marijuana, This is the heart of a drug problem, says Calzada. 90% of drug users in Uruguay and the world only use marijuana, so illegal markets are structured around that, even though there are other drugs with a better yield, such as cocaine and LSD. It's like an off-license that earns its highest profits from selling whiskey, but makes much more money by selling beer because there are 100 beer sales for every one bottle of whiskey. Marijuana also has the advantage of being less harmful, not accounting for even one of the 80 registered deaths linked to drug trafficking in Uruguay last year. By opening the door to regulation of cannabis, Calzada says the government has an alternative to the war on drugs approach, which has created more problems than it has solved. For 50 years, we have tried to tackle the drug problem with only one tool, penalization, and that has failed. As a result, we now have more consumers, bigger criminal organizations, money laundering, arms trafficking, and collateral damage. As a control model, we're convinced that it is more harmful than the drugs themselves. But critics say that Uruguay is taking a huge risk that could result in a wave of new addictions. If legalization goes ahead, I think the social damage will be enormous, says Nancy Alonso, who runs the Manantiales Foundation, a private addiction treatment center. Marijuana may seem innocent, but it is addictive, 15 times more carcinogenic than tobacco, and produces psychological disorders including depression, anxiety, and occasionally schizophrenia. More importantly, she says cannabis is a gateway drug that leads users to harder narcotics. Juvenile residents at the treatment center say their experience backs up such claims. I started with marijuana when I was 13 or 14 and then moved on to cocaine because I wanted something stronger, said Helen, a 15-year-old. If drugs are legalized, more people will consume them. The public too have yet to be convinced. A Factum poll in October showed 29% approved of legalization. Although sharply up from the 3% support levels of 10 years ago, this means the policy is still a potential vote loser. Supporters of the measure hope hard data will win over the doubters. Once the marijuana business moves out of the shadows, its size will be clearer, monitoring will be easier, and taxes can be levied and used to fund treatment of addicts and a more focused crackdown on harder drugs. Although the government is prepared to lose money to outbid the traffickers in the initial stage, once the state has a monopoly, the potential revenues are considerable. The authorities estimate that 10% of adult Uruguayans, 115,000 people, smoke cannabis. Existing law permits consumption of reasonable amounts of marijuana, but forbids sales. The new law should clear up this legal contradiction. The government will set up a cannabis research institute, which will monitor the program, handle approvals of seeds, establish policies for research, and regulate the industry. The market in Uruguay is estimated to be worth $30 million a year, according to Martin Fernandez, a lawyer working for the Association of Cannabis Studies, who says one in five Uruguayans have tried marijuana. But he admits the numbers are sketchy. It is hard to measure the illegal market, just as it is with human and illegal arms trafficking, he says. But with legalization, we should get a clear idea of the situation. Many are eyeing new business opportunities. At street level, the passage of the bill is likely to boost shops selling growing kits. In downtown Montevideo, one such store, Arugrow, is already seeing a sharp rise in demand for soil, grow tents, fertilizer, and other products. We're expanding fast, said one of the founders, Juan Andriguano Palazzi. 6 months ago, we sold 200 liters of soil a week, now it's more than 1,000 liters. Soon we'll need to move into bigger premises. But the big money is more likely to come from the pharmaceutical industry, which will be freer to develop and test marijuana painkillers and other treatments in Uruguay than in any other country. According to Bongo, several big international laboratories have visited Montevideo to discuss possible collaborations or investments. We have opportunities in the hemp industry and the spread of biotech and marijuana farming. I've just returned from a U.S. conference on the subject. There are lots of potential products, creams, oils, sweets, capsules, and products to treat multiple sclerosis and cancer. They all need scientific research to be validated. In other countries, that is limited. We don't have that inconvenience, said Bongo. I think it will be a new industry for the economy. Dope tourists could also be lured by cheap, legal, high-quality marijuana, but the authorities are adamant that the last thing they want is for Uruguay to end up as the Amsterdam of Latin America. Only residents will be entitled to buy cannabis. Resales are prohibited. Coffee shop that put indica, sativa, or hash browns on their menu will be closed down. We are trying to learn from the mistakes made by other countries, Fernandez says. Juan Vaz, a marijuana grower and longtime legalization campaigner, hopes the regulation strategy can be applied to other narcotics. It would make a big health impact if we could do the same for cocaine, crack and other drugs so users could avoid accidental overdoses. That would also make a lot of profit for the government. So far, however, Uruguayan officials have dismissed suggestions that they might use the same approach for harder drugs. They say the health risks posed by cocaine and heroin are far greater than those associated with marijuana, so they require a different strategy. Nonetheless, if the Senate passes the cannabis bill as expected, it won't only be the country's smokers who are delighted. Several Latin American leaders have also called for a shift from the current prohibition approach as the war on drugs takes a rising death toll with no sign of victory. Uruguay, once again, looks set to take the first step for the region. Vaz, who spent 11 months in prison for marijuana growing, says he now feels responsible for making the policy a success. "I will celebrate. It will be a victory. For many years we have been asking for this. Now we can ask nothing more," he says. "Now it is up to us to make it work."
Article number 6. Dr. Oz, how hemp seed boosts memory with omegas. Take it away.
Dr. Oz explains how hemp seed boosts memory with omegas. Source, The Examiner. If you think of hippies when you hear the word hemp, it's time to get educated about a product posed to become one of the hottest superfoods, hemp seeds. Featured during Dr. Mehmet Oz's November 18th talk show, hemp seeds can ease those memory problems while providing you with multiple health benefits. What's in hemp seed? It's high in omega-6 and omega-3, which are healthy fatty acids. The benefits range from enhancing your brain's memory and cognitive function to improving your heart health. And if you're wondering if you can get high on these seeds, the answer is no. What it does contain, more than 10 grams of protein per serving. Protein helps you stay full longer, reducing the number of total calories eaten each day. Read about 2 new studies showing how protein can boost your weight loss by clicking here. In addition, you get 48% of your daily magnesium needs in a 3-tablespoon serving. Magnesium is a powerhouse when it comes to reducing stress while increasing energy, says Dr. Oz. Where to find? Look in your local health food store or online.
Article number 7. If medical marijuana in California is de facto legalization, why not make it official? Take it away.
If medical marijuana in California is de facto legalization, why not make it official? By Jacob Salem. Source, Forbes. Possessing up to an ounce of marijuana in California is an infraction punishable by a $100 fine. In other words, state law treats pot smoking as a transgression akin to jaywalking or fishing without a license. Yet growing and selling marijuana are felonies that can send you to prison for years. If consuming marijuana is not a crime, how can it be a crime merely to help someone consume marijuana? That is a question voters will confront next fall if the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative qualifies for the ballot. The initiative, which would eliminate all state and local penalties for producing, possessing, and distributing marijuana, instructs the legislature to regulate cannabis in a manner analogous to, and no more onerous than, California's beer and wine model. That is similar to the policies approved last fall by voters in Colorado, where the legalization initiative was known as the Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol Act, and Washington, where the State Liquor Control Board will license pot shops that are scheduled to open next year. The Colorado and Washington initiatives both received about 55% of the vote, and recent polling in California indicates a similar level of support. All 3 states have had medical marijuana dispensaries for years, and that experience on the whole appears to have been reassuring. The main criticism of the dispensaries is that they cater largely to recreational consumers who fake or exaggerate symptoms to get the requisite doctor's notes, actually counts in favor of broader legalization. If medical marijuana is a charade that amounts to de facto legalization, what is there to fear from making it official? States that allow medical use do not seem to have suffered as a result. In fact, Montana State University economist D. Mark Anderson and University of Colorado economist Daniel Rees find that enacting medical marijuana laws is associated with a 13% drop in traffic fatalities, possibly because more cannabis consumption means less alcohol consumption, which has a much more dramatic effect on driving ability. Anderson and Rees also consider the impact of legalization on pot smoking by teenagers. Looking at data from the Youth Risk Behavior Survey from 1993 through 2011, they see little evidence of a relationship between legalizing medical marijuana and the use of marijuana among high school students. Narrowing the focus to California after medical marijuana dispensaries began proliferating, they find little evidence that marijuana use among Los Angeles high school students increased in the mid-2000s. The two economists' conclusion suggests that Californians need not worry that repealing pot prohibition will trigger a cannabis catastrophe. We expect that the legalization of recreational marijuana in Colorado and Washington will lead to increased marijuana consumption coupled with decreased alcohol consumption. As a consequence, these states will experience a reduction in the social harms resulting from alcohol use. While it is more than likely that marijuana produced by state-sanctioned growers will end up in the hands of minors, we predict that overall youth consumption will remain stable. On net, we predict the public health benefits of legalization to be positive. That prediction hinges on the assumption that marijuana and alcohol are substitutes, meaning that an increase in pot smoking will accompanied by a decrease in drinking. Writing in the same issue of the Journal of Policy Analysis and Management, RAND Corporation drug policy expert Rosalie Licardo-Pacula and University of South Carolina criminologist Eric Savigny say the evidence on that point remains mixed. If marijuana and alcohol turn out to be complements, they warn, the costs associated with more drinking could outweigh the benefits of legalization. Yet Pacula and Savigny acknowledge that the hazards associated with marijuana itself pale beside the cost of treating its production, sale, and use as crimes. Which brings us back to the question of how using force to stop people from obtaining marijuana can be morally justified, especially in a society that tolerates a much more dangerous intoxicant.
All right, folks, that's all I have for this week. Until next week, have a good day, good night, good week, bye-bye.
We pollinated your mind. Now, go pollinate the world.